are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. The biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be joined by Andy Kamenetsky of Locked On Lakers as questions have arisen about the security of Frank Vogel's job as the Lakers head coach, Russell Westbrook being benched, and more dysfunction coming out of Los Angeles. Then, we'll be joined by Doug Branson of Locked On Hornets, as the Hornets have put together an impressive string of wins. Just how good has LaMelo Ball looked, and what can the Hornets do to shore up their defense to make a significant push in this year's playoffs? And lastly, we are joined by Matt George of Locked On Kings, as there are so many rumors swirling around the Sacramento Kings and their activity going into this year's NBA trade deadline. Will Ben Simmons be a member of the Sacramento Kings here shortly? As always, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Andy Kamenetsky of Locked On Lakers, one half of Locked On Lakers, joining us here on Locked On NBA because there are questions looming over Frank Vogel's job security. We have Russell Westbrook getting benched at the end of games. There is so much going on with this Lakers team. Andy, I guess we got to start with just the biggest thing that's happened in the last week for the Lakers. I mean, Russell Westbrook getting benched at the end of a game. You have Frank Vogel coming out after the game saying, "I went with the five guys who I thought were going to win us the game." I mean, how do you, if you're the Lakers, how do you even move past that and work past that? I know they came out Friday and they had, you know, Russ had another quality outing after that, but this is kind of a big thing to have to move past.
Yeah. I mean, there's the dynamics of a coach like Frank Vogel, who is seen, I think, rather accurately as on kind of a game to game basis and being evaluated as this thing goes. And he does not have a ton of job security. And if front office truly wanted to make you feel like Frank Vogel was along for this ride for the foreseeable future, they would have given him not what I refer to as a fake extension, which was a one-year deal, basically making him a lame duck coach next year as opposed to this year. And Russ is a very prideful, headstrong guy. To his credit, he has played well in the two games since that benching. He has conceded that he was mad about it, but he said more mad that they lost the game. And he seems like he is looking to try to move past this professionally. I don't think this was Frank Vogel taking a shot at Russell Westbrook per se, even though Westbrook did not play well in this game. And, you know, there were defensive breakdowns that I think just put Vogel over the edge. And I think it was also indicative of Vogel recognizing that he was coaching for his job. But, you know, when he said, "I went with the players that I thought could win the game," that wasn't, to me, so much a shot at Russ as it was the front office. It was basically him saying, "This is what you saddled me with. This is the roster you guys reconstructed that plays against all of my strengths. And then we've had all these different issues going. This is what I'm rolling with." And, you know, he apparently had the carte blanche to do whatever he wanted, but I still think it may have been a middle finger to the front office at the same time. These are not mutually exclusive things.
So if you're trying to allocate some of the frustrations for Lakers fans or just NBA fans who are watching this Laker team struggle this season, I feel like you've got kind of three areas that you could maybe point towards, and you've got
just three.
Well, maybe I'm shortchanging them a little bit, but
who the hell taught you how to do math, Jackson?
I feel like ultimately, right, you've got people wanting to point the fingers at, you know, Frank Vogel. You've got people trying to blame Russell Westbrook, and you can look at the front office and just the overall construction of this Lakers team. But ultimately, I feel like anybody who's trying to make it just out to be a black and white thing, like it's just this one person or this one issue, that's kind of where you lose some of the nuance, because it just seems like it's just this mountain of different things that are all coalescing together, causing the issues for the Lakers this season, right?
Yeah. I mean, it would be difficult to pin it on one single thing. I mean, you can look at some factors and say they're a bigger issue than others. Like, you know, the construction of this roster, even under the best of circumstances, which the Lakers have not even remotely experienced because of all the injuries to Anthony Davis, to LeBron James, all the guys in and out of COVID protocols, these circumstances have been very difficult to navigate, even if everybody had been whole. But that being said, this was a very oddly constructed roster. And, you know, when they traded for Russell Westbrook. They lost a lot of their shooting. And some of their more proven shooting with defensive players. They lost guys who knew the system that they were running. You know, they lost a lot of familiarity and continuity. And this is not a roster that Frank Vogel would look to construct for himself. I don't think Frank Vogel's been completely blameless in all this. He's been, I think, very, it took him too long to really come to Jesus with the idea of they have to play smaller, even acknowledging some of the absences that made it difficult at times to go as small as you would want to, most notably Anthony Davis not being there. You know, there's a lot of playing bigger that is just Frank Vogel's worldview and aesthetic with basketball that it did win, help win him a championship and the Lakers 2 years ago, but this is a very different roster. But you know, the front office has to take a lot of blame for the construction of this and just how much turnover there's been. You have to point a finger at LeBron because by all accounts, he and Anthony Davis, who also deserves a finger, both wanted the Russell Westbrook trade. Russ has been at times, I think, better than given credit for, but he's gone through some extremely rough patches. And I'm sure you know this, Jackson, because you covered him with the Rockets. Russ's mistakes are loud. They are loud as hell, and they stand out a lot, even sometimes more than mistakes that I think if you went back and watched the tape are bigger than the ones he made.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's one of those situations where I do think there's been maybe an unfair amount of criticism thrown towards Russ this season, and you walk away thinking, unfortunately, if you are the Lakers and you're looking at their supposed big three in LeBron, AD, and Russ, one of those big three is the expendable one. And that's, I guess, the biggest question looming for this Lakers team is if they are not, as presently constructed, a title contender, then what needs to happen for them to get to that point? And moving Russ seems to be the only feasible potential option other than, you know, a potential, you know, on the fringe, you know, moving, trading of deals here and there, Talen Horton Tucker, potentially trying to get a team interested in him somewhere. Other than that, like, you're not going to make a major shakeup to this roster unless you find a taker for Russell Westbrook. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't think you're wrong because the Lakers' assets list pretty much begins and ends with Talen Horton Tucker. You know, Kendrick Nunn is the only other salary they have of note that isn't either, you know, one of the big three making a max or a bunch of minimum guys. And, you know, he hasn't played this whole season. I would disagree, though, with the idea of Russ being expendable, because that would mean that he would be easy to send somewhere. In reality, he's not expendable at all. You have to be able to do something. And, you know, the deals really aren't there. I'm sure you guys are hearing a lot about the supposed Westbrook for Wall rumors. I don't think that makes much sense for the Lakers. I definitely would not do it if I were them. If they have to include a first round pick to make it happen, like that would be insane. That would be malpractice for the Lakers to do. I don't even know how much a Wall for Westbrook deal straight up with nothing else attached necessarily helps the Lakers. And I would need to see evidence that John Wall can, you know, physically play basketball and do some things. And, you know, I think it'd be helpful if Houston could actually figure out a way to get him on the court, but, you know, or find the role that he agrees on, all this different stuff. But if that's the move, Wall versus Westbrook, I'll stick with what they have right now and see what you can do in the offseason or whatever. But I wouldn't make that move right now. I don't think it helps make them any better, particularly if you got to include a first round pick.
Realistic, serious. So I find it interesting just because, you know, you mentioned how I think at this point it's kind of the distinction between the ceiling of Russ, you could argue, is drastically higher than any potential ceiling that John Wall has at this point in his career. But even based on the limited action that we got to see out of John Wall last season with the Houston Rockets, I think he showed that he's still got, you know, enough left in the tank to help a team. And I've argued before on Locked On Rockets that if John Wall wasn't making the $44 million that he's making, you know, if he was making $20 million, teams would be chomping at the bit to trade for him because he's very clearly still an NBA caliber player that can help a team, be a push for a playoff team. It's just that large contract, which is why so many people have equated Russ and Wall because they make such a similar amount of money.
Well, they've been literally traded for each other.
There we go. And before, right? It's happened before. So we're potentially staring part two.
They're kind of like a reverse package deal, so to speak. But like, I mean, I also, like I said, I need to see evidence that John Wall is healthy and that he can stay on the court, because, I mean, regardless of whether or not you think that he could help the Lakers right now more than Russell Westbrook could, I need to make sure that he's going to be there the entire time. Because if nothing else, I know Russ is going to be available. He's been available this whole season. You know, he's had more injury concerns, and you know, he doesn't have the athleticism that he used to, but he's been, I think, generally more available than John Wall. And this is such a top-heavy team as it is that they cannot, I don't care how bad you think Russ has been this season, they are not in a place where addition is subtraction is addition with Russ. They don't have the talent to get by with that.
With that, I need to know, Andy, what's the latest on Anthony Davis? He's already missed a significant chunk of time. You know, when can we expect him back in the Lakers rotation?
It seems like it's going to be close. There had been some hope that he was going to play Sunday versus Miami. He was a game time decision. They ultimately deemed that he wasn't there yet. But the Lakers tend to play this stuff extremely close to the vest. Like Frank Vogel treats just releasing information about the starting lineup like it was information that the Pentagon would protect. So he wouldn't even allow for the idea, and I think the organization would not allow for the idea of letting you think Davis could be back anytime soon if they weren't close. And he's been ramping up more activity. I imagine it's going to be sometime this coming week. I don't have that firm. I don't know this for sure. It just seems like, that's the signs where it's going, as opposed to, say, Kendrick Nunn, where we just really have no idea, and he's actually taken a setback in his ramp-ups.
Well, whether or not Frank Vogel, you know, maintains his position as the Lakers head coach, what happens with Russell Westbrook down the line, you're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Lakers. Andy, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
Coming up, LaMelo Ball and the Charlotte Hornets have looked really good offensively, but will their defense ultimately be the thing that holds them back this season? First, quick message from our friends over at Truebill, because look, do you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's a business scam out to get you. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your hard-earned money. Download Truebill to finally take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 per year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions so hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap, one click, one button press. It is that easy. Don't fall for any more subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. That's Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. That's Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. And another message from our friends over at Built Bar, because look, it is the new year. So that means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your New Year's plan. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar. And they've got so many incredible flavors to choose from. Strawberry, mint brownie, peanut butter, cookies and cream, coconut brownie chunk is my personal favorite. You can't go wrong with a single flavor on their menu. Every bar, low cal, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Built Bar makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good, you'll want to eat it. Unlike other protein bars, which can be chalky or gritty or the consistency is just a little bit off. And you can check them out. Just go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. The NBA trade deadline is Thursday, February 10th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and Locked On NBA will be covering it live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Join Kim Becker, John Corrales, Locked On Fantasy Basketball host Josh Lloyd, and NBA veteran Antonio Daniels and get analysis of every blockbuster move. Subscribe to Locked On NBA YouTube and turn your notifications on so you know when they go live. Joining us now is Doug Branson, one of the hosts of Locked On Hornets. Doug, this Hornets team has reeled together some really impressive wins. We're not going to talk about the Sunday night loss against the Atlanta Hawks. Okay.
Thank goodness.
Not going to put you on the hot seat, man. Look, no Gordon Hayward, right? We're just going to write that as like a one-off, like, you know, not full strength, whatever have you. But this Hornets team has put together some impressive wins as of late. Last I checked, they were 10-3, 10-4 over the last 14, 15 or so games. They've had some impressive wins over the Milwaukee Bucks, the 76ers. Things are kind of coming together for this Hornets team. And at the heart of it all is LaMelo Ball, who has been... I run out of adjectives to kind of describe what it looks like when he plays. He's easily one of the most exhilarating players in the NBA. It seems like he's got a highlight, you know, a handful of highlight plays almost every single night he hits the floor. And he's just in his second year. What has it been like to see him kind of blossoming into one of this next generation superstars?
Yeah, I mean, for a franchise that really hasn't had a player of his caliber in a very long time, it's been exciting to see the fan excitement around somebody who is generating a lot of the heart, a lot of the energy, a lot of the creativity this season. And it's been fantastic to watch him continue to blossom as a playmaker. And to get to play with all of these veterans, I think, is really going to benefit him as he kind of continues to grow into a star. But it is, for the Hornets, you know, recently it's been about locking down on defense. This team goes as the defense goes, because offensively they've been really good all season, but they've oscillated a lot defensively. And so these big wins against the Milwaukee Bucks, the Philadelphia 76ers, they finally got a ESPN, a national TV win against Boston, broke that streak. They had not won a national TV game in a while. They've been doing that with defense. And so it's been an exciting season so far. Minus this game against Atlanta, they've been on a pretty good tear.
I'm glad you bring up the defense there, Doug, because this is a Hornets team that does not struggle for want of putting points on the board. I mean, they've got up and down the roster, they've got guys who can absolutely fill it up. They're a top three offense in the association. However, as you alluded to already, a bottom five defense. So to you, what has stood out about the defensive struggles to this point in the season? Is it scheme? Is it personnel? A bit of both?
I think you really have to point to personnel, and that they have this giant hole, I think, at the center position. They really hoped that bringing in Mason Plumlee, they let Bismack Biyombo go, who's having a great run with the Phoenix Suns, but we'll put that away for a little while. But they bring in Mason Plumlee. They hoped that Plumlee would be kind of a stopgap measure as they look to the, you know, maybe in the future to fill that center position, but it hasn't gone as well as they had hoped, especially defensively. And so it really is the piece that they're missing, especially if you want to compete in the playoffs, because it's one thing to be a hot shooting team and to push the pace and to score a lot of points offensively. But in the playoffs, if you really want to compete there, the game is going to slow down. It's going to start to grind, and you really have to be able to force players out of the paint and put somebody there that is a really true rim protection threat. And they just don't have that. And what that's meant for the defense is that they've had to play small a lot, and they've had to play a lot of zone. And when you do those things as a defense, you really have to have all five guys locked in, playing with each other, communicating. And it really has to start up top with the guards. Terry Rozier has admitted this season that he and LaMelo Ball haven't always chosen to play the most focused and intense defense. They have lately. They've made that choice, and you can see the ripple effects, the difference that it makes. But the Hornets have to really try so hard to play competent NBA-level defense because of a lack of personnel.
So with that lack of personnel, that lack of size in the middle, can we be expecting the Hornets to be a little active at this, you know, upcoming NBA trade deadline to try to shore up some of the defensive issues that they have? And if so, who would be the kind of trade chips on the trading block for this Charlotte team?
It's really interesting, Jackson. I mean, they have all of the sort of ingredients to be an NBA buyer. They have players this season who have really grown and excelled and exceeded their expectations. They have players that would certainly be attractive to other teams in a trade scenario. PJ Washington has played well offensively and defensively this year, and he's coming off the bench. They've got this situation with Miles Bridges where, you know, he's going to enter free agency, and they tried to get an extension done in the offseason last season, couldn't do it. And so now that's a big question mark. So will they re-sign him? Will they not? That kind of hangs over all of these trade discussions. But they've got players. The contract situation is interesting because they're heavy on like big contracts, and then they've got a lot of young talent with kind of small money deals. They don't have sort of those middle of the road 10, 11, $12 million contracts that help to get certain kinds of deals done. So I think it's an interesting question. They have all the ingredients to be a buyer, but is the situation right? Do they feel like a deal for a Sabonis or a smaller deal for a Claxton? Do they think they can get it done? And B, do they think that that deal is going to make them a legitimate playoff contender? Because if they don't, then I think they have to think twice before making a move that could possibly cost them future assets or young assets like their rookie, James Bouknight.
You know, I'm really interested that you threw Miles Bridges' name in there as kind of one of those names that I guess potentially might be, you know, on the move, just because I feel like he's had such an incredible year. His numbers are, you know, they jump off the page at you. I think he's got to be in the conversation for one of the most improved player of the year, you know, considerations. And in your eyes, I wanted to know, you know, just how important has his growth been to the success of this Hornets team this season?
Well, it's been absolutely essential. I mean, I think it's you know, Miles Bridges and LaMelo Ball 1 and 1A in terms of why this Hornets team has exceeded the sort of Vegas expectations for their record to this point. And I just want to clarify, I don't think they're even considering moving Miles Bridges. I think Gordon Hayward at this point would be a more sort of attractive piece for them to move because they have a glut at the wing position. But I think Miles Bridges, the reason I bring him up is because his contract situation and what they are going to have to do in order to re-sign him, probably going to have to give him the max, that sort of looms over the decisions that they have to make heading into this trade deadline. But, you know, he's struggled from three this year, but he is powerfully finishing at the rim. It's been incredible to watch his game sort of evolve because he started out his rookie year. He was really just a corner three-point shooter, and then they asked him to do a lot defensively. He really wants to be a two-way player, and he is driving the basketball incredibly this year. He's 61% from less than 10 feet on the year, 67% in the last 10 games when they've been playing really well. Some super circus finishes from Miles Bridges. We know he can dunk it, but he's finishing through contact, through layups, and he's developing his own offense. He doesn't always have to be facilitated to. Now, LaMelo Ball can do plenty of that, but it's nice to see Miles Bridges open up this new aspect of the Hornets offense when he can just take the ball and go get a bucket.
Not to mention the fact that some of the connections between LaMelo and Bridges, I'm worried for Eric Collins' health because, I mean, he goes absolutely bonkers in the booth. And not just like to have Eric Collins be the announcer for the Hornets for LaMelo Ball. Like it's a match made in heaven, isn't it, Doug?
It really is. We've had EC on the show a couple of times. He just loves the game. Like he has a true passion. I think some people tend to watch certain announcers like that that get really exuberant and go, well, that's a put on. That's, you know, they're doing it all kind of for the show. But honestly, that is not the vibe from EC. EC loves the game of basketball. He loves calling sports in general. He's a hardworking guy in the offseason. He doesn't take like the offseason off. He's out calling other sports. He just loves sports. He loves calling sports. He gets excited as fans do, and he sort of channels that excitement onto the microphone, and it is a perfect match because LaMelo Ball is providing plenty of those highlight opportunities this season.
As mentioned earlier, I said that we wouldn't talk about it. We're going to talk about it for a split second. Okay. Gordon Hayward did miss Sunday night's matchup against the Atlanta Hawks. The Hornets did wind up losing. Any bit of concern there? I know that he was listed out due to, you know, some foot soreness. Is that going to be a worry for down the stretch in the season? Anything that needs to be monitored?
So he's had issues with his foot in the past, but according to James Borrego, head coach of the Hornets, before this game, they don't seem to be concerned. There was talk before this season of trying to do a little bit of load management with Gordon Hayward to try to make sure that he stayed injury-free and that he was ready for a potential Hornets playoff run. But those plans, like a lot of the plans of a lot of NBA teams this season, have gone up in smoke because of absences due to health and safety protocols. The Hornets have had their fair share of those, and thus Gordon Hayward, the plans to really load manage him haven't come to fruition. But they had an opportunity here to give him a night off, and they wanted to take every precaution to make sure that he doesn't have to miss significant time. So to answer your question, no, I don't think it's a concern. And honestly, I don't think his absence was the reason that the Hornets dropped this game in blowout fashion to Atlanta. They simply just couldn't shoot the ball. They started this game 0 of 19 from three. And as you mentioned at the top of this segment, segment. The Hornets have been amazing at scoring the basketball from three. They're fourth in the NBA in three-point percentage, sixth in attempts. They've got a lot of guys who can shoot the ball, but on this night, it was sort of an aberration. The Hornets not able to put it in the cup from three, and that's why they lost this game to Atlanta.
Well, if you're watching with us on YouTube, you can see in Doug's background, help wanted defensive center will pay in LaMelo alley-oops. Just got to clear that up for our podcast
please,
listeners.
Mitch, do something, please.
Doug, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA. You're going to have us covered for everything over at Locked On Hornets, right?
That's right. Follow us at Locked On Hornets. Check us out on YouTube. We're wearing bee suits. We're doing all kinds of crazy stuff. We're really taking to the visual medium. So if you want to learn more about LaMelo Ball, check us out. We're on every day.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks, Jackson.
Coming up, how active are the Sacramento Kings going to be at the NBA trade deadline? Could Ben Simmons be headed out west as the new franchise centerpiece for the Kings? But first, a quick message from our friends over at betonline.ag, because BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website where when you sign up today, you use promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, even your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all of your gambling needs. Make a little money with Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. Joining us now is the host of Locked On Kings, Matt George. Matt, the Sacramento Kings find themselves amidst a ton of swirling trade rumors just before the NBA trade deadline is here. And also, unfortunately, the butt of a recent Saturday Night Live comedy sketch, which is about it's kind of just on brand, unfortunately, at this point for the Sacramento Kings, it feels like. But Matt, I can't even keep up with all these rumors swirling about the Sacramento Kings, where they're involved with trade rumors, where they're not. Reports coming out that De'Aaron Fox is not on the table. Is he on the table? So help clear things up for us. We're going to start off. Who is on the table for this Kings team, and who is clearly like an untouchable, if any, for the Sacramento Kings?
Well, first off, Jackson, that SNL skit was the most national attention the Sacramento Kings have had in quite some time. So honestly, it was a victory for the Kings, even if they were dragged the entire time. But no, it was in reality, it might not be that way after the trade deadline is over. The Kings might end up being the team at the trade deadline just with the amount of smoke that is swirling around this team. Now, since Monty McNair took over as general manager here in Sacramento, of course, formerly working with the Houston Rockets under Daryl Morey, he has said from day one that he wants to keep this team flexible so that he could make a big move when one becomes available. He's very much in the school of thought of, even in Sacramento, I can attract talent here. I want to make sure I put myself in a position for the Kings to be major players in big trades coming up, which was always a positive thing and still is a positive thing in a lot of ways, because that's exactly what this Kings team needs at this point if they want to make any kind of major move. Basically, Jackson, like the Kings are teetering on the line that is desperation at this point, and they're extremely close to, even if they do make a major move at the deadline, like we've heard so much about, so much swirling around the possibility of the Kings going out and getting Ben Simmons, which they're extremely interested in, Domantas Sabonis, which we understand to be, according to Sam Amick, basically their plan B if plan A of Ben Simmons doesn't work out. The Kings might be in a position before those trades actually go down, before February 10th, of falling so far out of it that those moves don't make a difference. Now, thankfully, I guess, the Western Conference is so bad this year that the Kings, even with how terrible that they've been, and make no mistake about it, they've been terrible, even if they're not down there with OKC and Houston. They've been really, really bad, very much a disappointment. They could completely fall out of it. And even if they're still in the mix for the play-in, this team doesn't look like they belong anywhere close to the playoffs. And I don't know if Ben Simmons or Domantas Sabonis, especially for the price tag, gets them anywhere closer to that. So I would say the smoke is very real covering this team. There's going to be more smoke before the end. I would expect the Kings to look very different on February 11th. They have to, or not only are their playoff dreams going to go up in smoke, their hopes of getting a halfway decent crowd in the Golden One Center again this season go up in smoke with it.
So you mentioned it feels like it might be, you know, teetering on borderline desperation at this point. Is this just from, you know, directives from Kings ownership, or what, that they desperately want to end the playoff drought and they're just trying to seek a way to get back in the door, even if it's not necessarily the right move for the longevity of the franchise?
It feels like jobs are on the line. It feels like there is a playoff mandate. Now, playoff is the important word there, not postseason. Playoff mandate, because the Kings could make the postseason for the first time in 15 plus seasons by making the play-in. But looking at this Kings team, it's possible that they could rattle off two wins, which more than likely they'd be a 10 seed or a 9 seed, so they'd have to win twice to actually get into the playoffs. They can do that. But would you put money on that at this point, looking at this Kings team? Absolutely not. So there seems to be a playoff mandate here in Sacramento, and I wouldn't be surprised if Monty McNair's job is on the line, which I think is absurd for someone who has really only had one full offseason as a general manager, and he's working for an ownership group that we know has plenty of problems in itself. If McNair and the Kings don't make the playoffs and McNair and this front office is fired, believe me, nobody here in Sacramento is going, okay, reset, this time we'll get it right. The problem is gone. The problem is still very much here in ownership that has really been a disaster for the 8 years that or eight seasons that this ownership group has been in control, taking over from the Maloofs. The majority of these years that the Kings have been in this playoff drought now belong to this current ownership group, not the former ownership group. So we can't play that blame card anymore. So I hope jobs are on the line, but the Kings are operating like jobs are on the line if they don't make the postseason. And in that case, we already saw it with Luke Walton, but more heads could potentially roll.
With some of those conflicting reports, I think the Kings find themselves right at this, almost like a fork in the road between, do they commit and continue to want to build around De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton and what is really, you know, a potentially exciting backcourt of the future for this Kings organization? Or do they go chips all in on the table on a guy like Ben Simmons or a guy like Sabonis and bring one of those in? Is it possible in your eyes, Matt, for them to get one of those guys without having to put Fox and Halliburton, you know, on the table as a trade asset?
It's a pipe dream that I and other Kings fans are still holding on to, but I would say no. I mean, in order to get talent, you have to give away talent. And as much as I think Daryl Morey has been absurd with his asking price for Ben Simmons, he knows what he's doing. And the reason why he holds for as long as he did is because he knows that over the course of the season, things change. The Kings go from at the beginning of the season saying, absolutely not, you're not getting De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Halliburton, to, hey, now maybe we'll consider it because circumstances have changed. Fox isn't playing as good as the Kings were hoping. The Kings overall are more of a disappointment. And that might not just be for Sacramento. That could be for Portland. Now maybe they're suddenly willing to include Damian Lillard, which I don't think is the case, but who knows? Like, things can change. The Indiana Pacers suddenly make Domantas Sabonis available. Like, things change all the time. I always say there's a player at the trade deadline that always becomes available that at the beginning of the season, we would have laughed at the possibility of that player becoming available. It happens almost every single season. That's what Daryl Morey was holding out for. And it seems like, for the most part, it's working for him. Now, there is still a very good chance that Ben Simmons could stay put and the Sixers could have this talent wasted on their bench when they have championship aspirations there. So, of course, it's a gamble. But I do believe, Jackson, that the Kings still see high value in building around Fox and Halliburton. The question is, timeline wise, and like we talked about with desperation, can this current front office get away with waiting for the two of them to work together? I still think it could be effective as long as you surround them properly. But at this point in time, I don't know what minor moves that you could make using Harrison Barnes and Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley to get players of substance that immediately make this team better. If the Kings want the big splash immediate upgrade that they're looking for, they have to trade one of De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Halliburton, which is why I think they're shopping Fox so heavily, because in my mind, if the Kings have to pick between the two of Fox and Halliburton, they're picking Tyrese.
You know, I sit here wondering, it's so funny. You've got Daryl Morey and like that tree of executives under him who they, you know, work together here in Houston. And I walk away just hoping that Daryl Morey doesn't, you know, somehow fleece Monty McNair in Sacramento. But Matt, just, I know right now there's still a lot of season left to be played, but Alvin Gentry stepping in as the interim head coach for this Kings team. Have you seen anything out of Gentry to this point that makes you think he has a future in Sacramento past this season as a potential long-term head coaching fit? And if not, who do you have your eyes set on, or who have you entertained the idea of the Kings reaching out to for their potential next head coaching position? I know we're a ways away from the offseason, but.
Yeah, I think Gentry is a placeholder. I think Gentry will end up being a candidate by this upcoming offseason. He'll be under consideration, but I would not put any money on Alvin Gentry returning here in Sacramento. It's not like he's done anything wrong. He has inherited a team that is beyond saving. Now, I didn't believe that Luke Walton was the perfect head coach to lead the Kings to the promised land, like Vlade labeled him when he hired him a number of years ago. But I did not believe that Luke Walton was the problem with this Kings team, and that's been pretty clear. This core is now on their third coach in Gentry. When I say core, I mean mainly De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield and it's kind of Harrison Barnes and Marvin Bagley and Rashawn Holmes. Like, this group is now on their third head coach. They haven't shown as a unit to be capable of performing for anybody. And I truly don't think it's an exaggeration with this group to say if Greg Popovich was on this bench right now, as much of a genius as he is, I don't know how much more Popovich could get out of this group. This group, just as talented as they are, they do not seem capable of playing well together. So to answer your question, I don't think Gentry has much of a chance. And then when it comes to a coaching search, you know, there's a couple of candidates that are out there that I personally like. I'm a big fan of Kenny Atkinson, especially if the Kings go young. He's a developmental coach. And then I think there's something to be said for Doug Christie, Sacramento Kings legend, who's in his first year ever as an assistant coach in the NBA, but I know he has a lot of supporters here in Sacramento. He has a lot of respect here. And if the Kings want to go in a direction of going young and being homegrown, Doug is a legitimate and serious candidate. I would say no matter what the Kings do, Jackson, for the first time really in the history of this ownership group in 8 seasons, which is crazy to think about, the Kings need to actually execute a proper coaching search. Because if you think about it, since this ownership group took over, they hired Mike Malone before hiring a general manager in Pete D'Alessandro, who of course famously fired Mike Malone after the Kings got off to that great start. Then there was the whole debacle with Ty Corbin and George Karl. And then really in Vlade's time as a general manager, he wanted Luke Walton. Walton said no, went to the Lakers. So he scooped up Dave Yeager within hours of Yeager being fired. Then as soon as everybody got wind that Luke Walton was going to be fired and not going to be returned to the Lakers, the Kings fired Yeager and hired Walton, even though they didn't even interview anybody. Monty Williams wanted the job. And they didn't even interview Monty Williams. They just plucked Luke Walton and said, this is our guy. They have not undergone a full legitimate coaching search in almost a decade, which is crazy to think about with how much of a revolving door of coaches this organization has had. So no matter who they pick, just do your damn homework, please. And make it clear, if Monty McNair's hiring that guy, make sure Monty is sticking around long term. Don't have another general manager hire another coach only for the general manager's head to be chopped off, and then we'll do this whole circus over again.
A lot of different things to pay attention to with the Sacramento Kings. Could they be the next home for Ben Simmons? You're going to keep us posted for all of that and more. Everything Sacramento Kings over at Locked On Kings. Matt, thanks for stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thank you so much, Jackson. It's a pleasure as always. We'll talk again soon. Hopefully about better stuff, but probably not.
That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, the brand new Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, check out the Locked On NBA YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA, like, comment, subscribe, all of that. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.